Hello, everybody. Gina Aliotti here, and my apologies for a long overdue podcast. Just been crazy adding the personal log to the site and all the changes that have been made, like I mentioned, a lot on the back end that aren't visible to everybody's eyes. But lots of changes going on, lots of exciting things, always moving forward, constant improvement, that whole principle on Kaizen that I always talk about. Anyways, I would like to get right into our podcast, and I'm actually going to break this into two because there's quite a few questions. So the first one, I'm going to hit more on the topics on training and some of the questions you had in regards to muscle growth and maintenance and lifestyle program and all that. So let's just dig right into some of the questions. And our first one's talking about mainstreaming legs. And this is a topic I love because this is something I had to do with my just genetically muscular legs. This is something that I've had to kind of do myself. And so I, over the past 6 to 8 years, have really kind of figured out what works, again, for me, but there's a lot of tools that work in the process of mainstreaming your legs. So in mainstreaming your legs, the different types of cardio and training. So here's what I would recommend. If you genetically have muscular legs, that means that, you know, you were just born with muscular legs and you look at weights and your legs grow. Okay, well, that's me, and I'm sure there's several of you that are listening that can relate, and then others of you that are just saying, oh, man, I wish I had that problem, because you're doing everything you can to make your legs get a little bit bigger and more muscular. But in mainstreaming your legs, what I suggest is limited to light to no weight. And what I do is a lot of body weight movements, a lot of body weight squats, a lot of very light weights, you know, light leg extensions, a lot of plyometric work, just really utilizing my body to just keep the muscles stimulated, because you don't want to just stop working them all together, but you do want to limit the amount that you do work them. So when it comes to working out with weights, I suggest very light leg extensions, maybe doing body squats with a light bar along your shoulders, maybe even a 15-pound bar, you know, very lightweight and higher reps, and then also just doing a lot of body weight squats, one leg up on a bench, doing lunges, just all body weight, and really focusing on form, squeezing, and connecting with the muscles. So once you have the mass that you need or that you were born with, it's really about just detail work and kind of just shaping your legs rather than building the mass. So very, very light to no weight, focusing on detail work, squeezing, leg extensions with light weight, but really focusing on moving those toes in the neutral position, turning them out, and then turning them in to just hit different areas of the tiers. So it's less about volume, and it's more about higher reps and detail work and really kind of putting your mind into sculpting and shaping your legs rather than putting on size and going heavy. As far as cardio goes, really in mainstreaming your legs, it is a lot of cardio. It's a lot more, you know, higher intensity workouts, maybe circuit training and that kind of thing with the plyometrics, and then hitting the cardiovascular exercise with longer duration cardio as well as intense cardio. So what I would suggest is utilizing the different machines, so always changing things up, but doing the high incline walking on the treadmill has really, really helped. There was a period of time where I was doing only the incline walking and on a very high incline walking very fast, and you literally could call me a speed walker, but that really, really helped. It really helped sculpt my glutes and my hamstrings. And when I'm saying walking fast, I'm not saying like a 4.2. I'm talking about like up in the high fours and low fives, which is a crazy walk, mind you, holding on, always holding on, otherwise you're going to fall off the treadmill. But the fast walking on the inclines really helped sculpt my legs, make them, you know, full, but yet bring them down and mainstream them. So walking on the incline, and then, you know, utilizing the step mill on occasion just to change things up. But what I like to do is skip every other step. And particularly for bigger legs, if you do every step, you're really stimulating your quads, whereas every other step, yes, you're still going to get some quad stimulation, but you're really going to target the glute hamstrings by using that heel with every step. So utilizing the step mill every other step, and then the treadmill walking on an incline, and then if you want to change things up and do the elliptical here and there, but or the bike, but I'm just not a big firm believer in the elliptical for long periods of time just because it's pretty darn boring if you ask me, but that's just my opinion. And then running. Running is something that you can incorporate into your program as well, but one thing you have to be careful with running is, number one, yes, it will streamline your legs, and, you know, you will see that a lot of people, once they start running, they really start to drop pretty quickly. But here's a couple things with running. You have to be careful because running will decrease the size of your glutes. That's why a lot of runners have those kind of flatter glutes. And I've actually noticed from the amount of running I've done, I've lost a little bit of the roundness. So that's something that you want to be careful with, is running too much to lose that roundness in your glutes. But running is really good for mainstreaming. So it's kind of finding that balance and throwing in a couple runs here and there and just kind of seeing how your body responds to that. So those are my suggestions for maintenance, and it's really helped with me, and I think the best suggestion is to try something different, maybe try a couple of my suggestions. You want to give it 4 to 5 weeks and then kind of reassess. Take photos of yourself now before you start and then photos after. I love photos because photos are so visual and you can really see what's going on. And then at that point, then you can break down your training further and see what you want to do, what worked, what didn't work, and change things up. So usually you want to give yourself about 4 to 5 weeks. So those are my suggestions on mainstreaming. It can be done. It is difficult if you have the muscle in your legs, but it can be done. And over time, and just kind of consistency and really, really just staying away from those weights as much as possible is going to be the key. Okay, now moving on. Oh, body parts that need extra attention. So you're trying to mainstream your legs is one thing, but then say your shoulders are an area that need a special attention. And that's another area that I had to really focus on, because as my legs needed to come down, upper body still needs to stay full. And you have to be careful that as you bring down your legs, your upper body doesn't come down with your legs, because it's all about balance, and you want to make sure that you have the symmetry from top to bottom. So while you're focusing on less weight with the lower half, you still want to focus on the isolated exercises with your upper body. So let's say shoulders is an area that you really want to improve, and you notice that if you don't hit those shoulders hard, then they start to dwindle. So what you need to do is still focus on the upper body heavy shoulder training. That's really key. So as much as you're doing circuit training and lightweight on the lower, heavy on the shoulders. And when I say heavy, I mean, you know, heavy enough to where you might need a spot, which is suggested, because then you can kind of push yourself a little bit and have the security that you know somebody's going to help you if you need it. But, you know, always focusing on that good form. And whenever you're doing any shoulder work, core needs to be tight, because if you're not focusing on keeping that core tight, you're going to use that core for stabilization, whether you're sitting or standing. And what happens with using that core for stabilization is you could increase your waistline, because you're using it for stabilization and the muscles are being stimulated. So just keeping your core tight and really focusing on pushing up and really focusing on those shoulders and keeping the core as tight as possible. So as you're going heavy, remember form is so important. And, you know, as far as reps go, you should definitely do a lower rep range, so anywhere between 6 to 8 to 12. And then, of course, change is good. You don't want your body to get used to one thing, so then you might want to change it up and do some higher intensity just to focus more on detail work. So even if you are trying to build size, you have to remember that it's about sculpting and it's about detail as well. And I always imagine the body, or I envision the body as a sculpture. And, you know, if you're trying to build size, yeah, but you just don't want a big shoulder. You want a nicely sculpted, round, but yet, you know, detailed shoulder. So it's about building the size, but then it's about digging in a little bit deeper and really focusing on detail work. And that's where you're going to get just varying the position of your hands, increasing rep range, and decreasing weight, and that's going to really help develop more of a detailed muscular development. So heavy, but then again, you want to change things up and go more for detail work and decrease the weight and increase the reps. Okay, so I hope that helps. Give that a try. And as far as, like, if you're in, like, a maintenance program, kind of like what we just talked about, you're trying to maintain or decrease your lower body, and then you're trying to kind of increase your upper, but you're pretty much happy with your package. Let's say you do that, and you're happy. You're like, you know what? I did it. It worked. I got the lower body down. I got my upper body just where I want it. I'm good to go. Well, then you need to shift into more of a maintenance plan. And what that entails is incorporating just a lot of circuit training, but then still hitting the body parts that you've worked so hard to improve. You don't want to always circuit train those because they will start to come down in size. So even when you get your body to where you want it and you're totally satisfied, you're happy, but of course we're always trying to make improvements. We're never, 100% done. We don't ever throw in the towel. But once you get to that point, it's really important that you still focus on days where you're still doing isolated exercises. So even when you're in the maintenance mode, you might hit the weights heavy for shoulders once a week. So once you're in maintenance mode, it becomes a little bit more flexible. So when you have a plan and you're trying to build or you're trying to downsize, you have more of a structured plan. But then once you kind of get into maintenance, it becomes more of a flexible plan where you do circuit training and then, you know what, hey, I feel like I got to hit those shoulders hard. I just feel like training shoulders, then you go for that. So the biggest difference in the maintenance plan is just flexibility and having fun with the training and just doing a little bit less structure and a little bit more going with how you feel, but definitely incorporating in those isolated days where you're hitting those body parts that you work so hard to improve. And usually those are the shoulders and then the glutes. Those are the two areas that that I suggest you always kind of hit once a week pretty heavy. And then the other body parts for maintenance, you just have fun, you circuit train. You know, you do a lot of the type of workouts that I post in my personal log, which I hope that you guys all do check out because I do post my workouts and they're just great to, you know, refresh what you're doing and maybe try something different. So myself, I'm in the maintenance mode. So if you're looking for more of a maintenance plan, just checking out my workouts and my cardio is going to give you some ideas and some examples of what I do and some ways that you can kind of jump on board if you're trying to just be in the maintenance mode. All right, moving on. So a question here is about plyometrics in combination with regular training and if it's okay to do plyos one day and then the next day maybe hit legs, even though you hit legs in the plyos. Is that okay? Are you going to break down the muscle? And the answer to that is absolutely okay, absolutely. When you're doing plyometric work, you're really getting, it's more detail work and you're really getting the heart rate up and it's more of a circuit style. So it's more of a cardiovascular workout. So even though, yeah, you're doing jump squats and then you're doing step-ups and you're doing all these things fast, you're not focusing on isolated exercises like you are when you're just, you know, doing just step-ups with heavy weights in your hands or you're doing a leg press. It's a different kind of workout. So you're not going to be breaking down the muscle as you are when you're doing isolated exercises. Of course, there is some breakdown because you're still working the muscles, but it's a different type of workout. One, like I said, is more cardio-based, and the other one is more of, you know, building and really focusing on tearing the muscles and or the muscle fibers and then rebuilding those muscles, which is going to, in turn, stimulate growth. So I think it's absolutely okay to do plyos one day and then the next day hit legs. Now, the only reason I would say that it wouldn't be okay is say for some reason you did something crazy in your plyo workout and you're just really sore the next day. Well, then maybe you shouldn't hit legs that next day. Maybe you should do an upper body workout or something. But if you're feeling good and you're not sore, you're not going to break down that muscle. You're going to be just fine. So incorporating the plyos and then the next day isolated is great, and that's a lot of what I do with my training as well. So as long as you're good to go and you're not sore and you feel up to the task, go for it. Incorporate the plyos, then jump on the isolated the following day. Great plan, keeping things fresh and exciting. Okay, moving on. So some questions about V-taper and back work. The V-taper is so important, as we all know. So many times, people ask, how do I make my waistline smaller? Okay, well, number one, you want to be sure to always focus on your core so that you're not growing it, so you're keeping it where it's at. But really making it smaller, other than diet and just getting the body fat off the waistline, it's about building your lats. And building your lats and creating more of that V-taper is going to make that waistline appear smaller. And so it's about building the lats. And I did post a video on back training about a month ago or so. So please do check that out if you want an example in a video of different ways that I've done that I do back work to increase that V taper in the lats. But basically, a lot of the exercises are just they're lat exercises. So you want to do a lot of wide grip pulls. So my favorite, and this is going to works every time, is pull-ups. Pull-ups all the way. Pull-ups at every back workout. Wide grip pull-ups, really focusing on those lats. pull-ups is number one. That's my number one exercise for increasing the lat size. Second is T-bar rows. T-bar rows are great, those wide-grip T-bar rows. Then any kind of wide-grip lat pull-down. But the key is just really focusing on your lats. So making sure that your lats are engaged and you're focusing on making sure that they're out. And for those of you that are competitors and you know how to get those lats out, it's my suggestion that you get those lats out and then you perform your exercise. For those of you that are not competitors, it's basically just engaging in your lats. And then once you engage, you want to keep them engaged throughout the full motion, whether you're in the concentric or the eccentric motion. You always want to keep the lats engaged at all times. And focusing on decreasing rep range, again, if you're trying to increase the width of your back, but you don't, and you want to go for heavier weights, but you don't want to go so heavy that your lats aren't engaged anymore and your mid-back's engaged. It's really about going as heavy as you can to still keep proper form. And in any exercises you do, heavy weights, when you're going for heavy weight, it's always about form. And once you feel that form slightly deviates, or once you feel that you're not engaging that muscle you're working, you're done. And you need to just lay off and be done with it, because it's all about form and hitting the muscle group that you're working. Right? I mean, you don't want to be working out your biceps when you're really focusing on lats, because that can easily happen if you're going too heavy. You're actually working your bicep, which is the secondary muscle that's being worked. So focus on form and really put your mind into what you're working. And the minute you feel that you're not working that muscle, you're done with that. You need to decrease weight, or maybe your body's just, you're just done with that exercise. Okay, moving on to a little bit more about food and nutrition, supplements, and that kind of stuff. One of the questions was about supplements and the best supplements for muscular growth. All right, well, my suggestion is I believe in some over-the-counter supplements, you know, such as your branched-chain aminos. Those are great for muscular growth. Protein powder, a good low-carb protein powder is great. Your EFAs, your essential fatty acids, definitely all the time you want to keep in those fatty acids, and those are going to help with so many different things, which I've talked about, including your skin, hair, nails, but of course muscular growth. It's just those healthy fats are key. ZMAs are also really important, and zinc, magnesium, and it's been shown to increase your anabolic hormone levels and muscular strength, especially in athletes such as ourselves who are working out hard and our bodies are being depleted of zinc and magnesium. You need to make sure that you're supplying your body back those minerals to help you with that growth. Another thing is the ZMA helps you sleep, and we all need sleep and rest, recovery. So ZMAs are a big one for muscular growth. And then, of course, sleep, which gives us a good night's sleep. And then, in turn, when we're resting, we're able to build because our body's recovering and building as we sleep. So ZMAs are great for multiple reasons. But my biggest thing, aside from the supplements I just mentioned, is food. Food, food, food. There's not a better supplement out there than food. I don't like it when people supplement their meals with something other than food. I think food is going to be your key to muscular growth. Good quality food is number one, and that is really, really what it's going to take to build that body that you're imagining. It's just quality food. Quality over quantity. It's just all about getting in the foods that are going to help you achieve your goals. Those are your lean proteins, your complex carbs, your good fats. And your lean proteins is really key. When you're looking to build, your protein levels need to be slightly higher than the average person. And when I say slightly higher, I'm saying, you know, like 1 gram to 1.5 grams. I know some people in certain stages of their training go up to, you know, 1.75 to 2 grams per pound. Now, that's high. That's very high. I do know some people that have gone up that high, but it should only be for short periods of time if you're going to be one of those people that just tries it for a couple weeks just to increase your protein. But that is pretty high. And keep in mind that when your protein levels are higher than normal, you want to make sure that you're intaking a lot of water to just flush out that excess protein and keep everything flowing. But creatine supplement, I don't know. I to be honest with you, I've never actually tried it. I've had clients try it. Some people are successful with it, some people not so much. I have a great article on creatine if you want to learn more about it. But you can get creatine from food. So you can get creatine from red meats, from different sources of lean proteins. But red meat's a great great form of creatine. So, you know, meats, lean meats, good cuts of meats, just quality food is where you're going to get that muscular growth that you're looking for. And like I mentioned, a couple of the supplements are great, but really the key and the foundation should be in the quality foods that you're eating on a daily basis. So another question is about life. When you're in your lifestyle balance program, is carb cycling recommended or regular carb intake? And, you know, I always follow a carb cycling program. Now, because I've been doing this for so long and it's like clockwork to me, I don't have to be so regimented and put it down on paper, okay, I'm going to have, you know, 50 and then I'm going to jump it up to 100 and I'm going to go up to 200. I don't really carb cycle consciously. It's kind of subconscious. But for those of you that don't have so much experience, you might need to map out a plan and follow it. And then before you know it, you kind of subconsciously do follow a carb cycling plan. So I do follow a carb cycling plan for life. And the way that it works is just making smart choices. Like I said, it's all subconscious at this point for me. But it's, you know, if you know that you've had a really high fat day, then, of course, you don't want to have your carbs high as well. Or say you had a really high carb day, you don't want your fats to be up. So it's more about, it's not so much about having a structured plan as it is just making decisions based on what you've intaken that day. So, you know, and then say you had a high carb day, well, the next day you don't want to do another high carb day. So it's just about kind of really thinking about what you've done and making decisions based on your choices. And that's where the food log comes in, because you're able to really kind of put down, or the personal log, you're able to put down, you know, what you've had and then kind of look at it. And you could even look at, you know, say your weight's up a couple pounds, you can look at your last week and see what you did and how your carb rotation was and how your fat rotation was. And then you can make assessments on how that worked or didn't work for you. And then you can make your changes for the following week. So I think carb cycling is important, and I think it does work. Just kind of keeping your body guessing, depleting those glycogen stores and then refilling them, it just kind of keeps you in a really good place, and it's great for maintenance, just to kind of always keep those glycogen stores never overly full and never on empty all the time. So carb cycling is important, but it's just about making smart decisions based on what your decisions were that previous day or for your previous meals. So carb cycling all the way. Then last question here, and then I'm going to finish up this first podcast and then move into our second one here in the near future. But the last one is back to kind of a competitive question, and it's talking about cardio after a show and the best way to cycle off large amounts of cardio. And this is a really good question because, you know, when you're an athlete and you're getting ready for a show, whether it be a triathlon or whether it be a marathon or whether it be a figure competition or whatever it may be, when your cardio levels are extremely high, because they have to be in order for you to get rid of that last little bit of body fat or in order for you to really train for your event, such as a marathon or a triathlon, your cardio levels are so high, and they're not realistic for life. So if you're doing 2 hours of cardio a day, there's no way you can maintain that for life. I mean, there's no way. That is so not realistic. And for those that are maintaining that, we need to talk, but, it's not realistic. And so the best way to do it, now, mind you, when you have a goal in mind and you're going after something, there's certain things you need to do to reach that goal. And that's okay for a period of time, but we're talking about lifestyle. We're talking about realistic living and having a family and having, you know, a life outside of the gym, which I know we all want and have to have, and it's important for our sanity and for so many areas of our life. And when it comes to realistic cardio, 5-6 days a week, 30 to 40 minutes is great. That's perfect, you know, and that's really all you need. But of course, when you're doing so much, you're doing 2 hours a day, you can't just go, you know, after doing that much for so long, you can't just go cold turkey and do nothing, or go cold turkey and do 30 minutes. Your body's going to freak out and not know what's going on and start to store fat. So tapering off is the way to go. So it's basically just decreasing those minutes little by little, week by week. So maybe if you're doing 2 hours a day, you go down to an hour and let's say an hour, even an hour. And then so you just kind of cut it in half. And then the next week you cut it down by 10 minutes. So then you're doing 50 minutes. And then after that, then after about 2 to 3 weeks, you're good. You've kind of come down and then your body's kind of ready to just regulate, and then you can go back into the lifestyle. So I say you give yourself 3 weeks of tapering down that cardio, and then you're into maintenance mode. But mind you, there wasn't a question about the nutrition side of things, but I do have to mention that after a show, tapering off the cardio is important, but just as important is tapering into regular eating habits. So you don't go from eating all chicken and vegetables and brown rice to eating chicken and pizza and brown rice. You know, I mean, you don't want to just throw in all those other foods. You want to slowly increase carbohydrates. You want to slowly increase fats. You want to slowly increase those foods that you maybe haven't had for a while slowly decreasing cardio. So you see, if you decrease the cardio and slowly increase the food, then you'll kind of get yourself back into that balance mode and you're good to go into the maintenance lifestyle program. So it can happen, and it's absolutely not going to be an issue as long as you taper off slowly. And the reason people come into issues is when they're tired, their bodies are done, they're mentally done, and they just say, okay, done with the cardio, I'm done with my show, increase the food, I'm done with the show, I don't need to eat this way, so I can just start eating regular. Well, that's when people kind of, they get into trouble. So the best thing is just to taper off and taper in, taper off cardio, taper into the real life eating plan. And, those are my pointers. So with that, you're going to be a success. I want to thank everybody for being a part of GinaAliotti.com. We are just creating such an amazing network of women, strong. And I have to say, I'm wearing my Own It shirt. And I'll tell you what, every time I own this shirt, I feel so empowered. And so for those of you that have your Own It shirt, own it. For those of you that don't, you should grab one, because something about this shirt, when I wear it, it makes me feel empowered. Either way, own where you're at, own moving forward. Congratulations to everybody on their continued success. And moving on to part two of the podcast, and there's a lot to talk about, you see, so I had to break it into two. But have a fabulous day, everybody. Thank you again for being a part of our amazing family. Keep up the great work, and we will touch base very soon.